Malcolm Honlein is with us for the weekly update, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, with us on a Friday morning, Erev Shabbos. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Good to be with you as always.
Appreciate that very much. By the way, the plane is called Wing of Zion. What I don't like about it is that it's in singular. I don't get it. Doesn't an airplane have multiple wings the last time I checked? I mean, who's doing? I need to know who's doing and making these decisions in Israel. But anyway, that is the plane on which the Prime Minister of Israel for the very first time landed in the United States, the private plane of the government of Israel, I guess we can call it. And it's called Wing of Zion. And my gosh, am I glad that we set that straight. It was on my mind for an entire week, Mr. Honlein. Well, you know what happened in Washington this week? There was a speech by the Prime Minister of Israel. Well, I obviously want your analysis and opinion in general, but one of the bigger questions in terms of specifics is whether it was a mistake that the Prime Minister of Israel from that lectern did not address the potential for a ceasefire slash hostage deal. What did you think of that one point of criticism that came up after the speech?
So I was there, and when people asked me afterwards, I said, I think it accomplished what he wanted, and it's no secret, I was not in favor originally of the speech. I thought that the timing, given the conventions, given the political unrest and uncertainties here, that this was subject to exploitation, and the demonstrations, and given a lot of the media bias, would already stack the deck against the prime minister, who gave a very powerful speech, interrupted 53, 55 times, most of any speech, not only of his four speeches. I've attended all four of them, but more than anybody else who spoke in a joint session of Congress. There was the concern about the non-attendance, which did materialize in the sense that I think 60 or so Democrats didn't come, mostly on the House side, but most visibly Vice President Harris, who usually sits as President of the Senate along with the Speaker of the House, and instead Ben Cardin, who's Chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, was given that kibbutz, that honor. And then J.D. Vance was also not there, who was the Republican vice presidential candidate. Both were on campaign trips. I think the coverage initially was strong. It then deteriorated, as was to be expected for anything they didn't say, but most of all because of the criticisms of the families of the hostages who were here, some of whom even engaged in a very minor protest, wearing T-shirts, standing up to protest during the speech, which was subject to the speaker's rules that nothing would be tolerated, and several of them were detained.
Wow.
During the session, it was not something that was very visible, but I saw it happening.
Wow.
The shame is that Rashid Tlaib, who could hold up signs saying war criminal and other things against Netanyahu, was not removed, and Hakeem Jeffries and others that defended her right to do it was not acceptable. It should not have been acceptable if protests were not allowed in the hall, in the room. There were no empty seats. Everything was filled in.
I can't believe I didn't see that anywhere about the hostage T-shirts. I can't the hostage family T-shirts,
because it was done in the gallery. It was up at,
and they were removed. They were removed from the room.
They were detained afterwards too. I mean, it was not a. As I said, it was silent. It was not disrespectful so much, but they were detained, and I helped arrange somebody to go there with them to the police, the Capitol Police headquarters, where they were being held for question, whatever. But I'm sure they were released. The content of the speech itself covered the basis that Netanyahu wanted, which was to say, we're fighting your fight. The battle that we're engaged in is part of the global war against Western society and democracy. Unfortunately, because of subsequent developments, including President Biden's speech, it was very short-lived, and they right away started with the criticisms, nitpicking everything that he said, right, where he asserted about the number of people, of civilians. I think some things, his joke about chickens in Kentucky Fried Chicken did not go over well,
right.
Or some of the other specific references, but
I thought it was a bad idea to get into the weeds of the whole numbers game.
I think a lot would agree with you.
I think it's a battle you can't win, frankly.
You're right, and when this should be a high level speech. Most of it was. It communicated the message that this is not something Israel wanted, and he did not do enough in terms of wanting out. But he did give for the first time a vision of the day after. Talking about the construct for Gaza post-war, though not in detail. There are a lot of proposals, which I heard in Washington and various places, some of which are practical, some of which are certainly not practical. The tenor afterwards was pretty upbeat. People who were there felt privileged to have been there, to hear a really significant address. But as everything broke down along party lines, or largely along party lines, there were people who felt he spent too much time on soldiers, too much time on other subjects, that the families, the hostages, didn't feel that they heard enough about. He couldn't say what they wanted, which was that we're going to have a deal tomorrow and we're going to, you know, get the hostages out. He did speak about it. I was with him in a meeting the night before where he spoke very forcefully about the hostage issue and about the difficulties. I remember Rabin once told us that the most difficult day for him as prime minister was when a soldier got killed, because he said, "I give the order for them to go out to battle, and I see their families every day." He said, "This is not the United States where the president sits in Washington. Washington doesn't confront anybody." He said, "I walk out of my door in the morning. I walk to my own, I go to my office. I go to anywhere else. I see them everywhere."
Yep.
And that sense of responsibility, I think, is very hard for most people to understand the burden that the prime minister of Israel carries, because you have to balance the release and the shalit keep coming up. And I know a lot of people ask me about it. So the reference, you know, the release of people who, like Zohar, who came back and were part of October 7th. So there's so much that has to wait at a time when his coalition is not solid, and, you know, people anticipate the changes there, but also because of the change here, you now have Kamala Harris as the candidate. That's a very significant change.
Yeah, we'll get to her in a minute. I just want to get to one other thing regarding that specific day and the night before. It's interesting you say you're with him the night before, because, look, one has to admit that it is an amazing feeling to see the majority of the United States Congress being overwhelmingly supportive of Israel. And I think, I mean, you were in the room. I'm sure you got that feeling. It was that's a wonderful feeling. And I think it does reflect generally the majority, even if it's a small majority, but the majority of the United States citizens being sympathetic and supportive in some way of Israel. But that active minority, these people on the street with violent activity and attacking cops and burning the American flag. And you mentioned the night before, I mean, if these photos of the crickets and maggots being thrown at the Watergate Hotel, in fact, you know, served as a true deterrent to the prime minister and his staff's plans, then I don't know what to say. I mean, how on earth can one not investigate who went ahead and did that and caused all that damage and arrest them and throw the key away? What could you tell us, number one, about my comments regarding the majority of both Congress and Americans, and how the United States leadership is going to deal with the violent activities on the streets?
So you actually posed a lot of very important questions that are being wrestled with. I was at the Watergate Hotel where the Prime Minister was staying and where that incident occurred during the night after our meeting. we had a meeting with the Prime Minister. Representatives of a number of Jewish organizations were there, and he spent considerable time. He had a meeting with evangelical leaders right before that, and he obviously had other meetings during the day. He was very calm and presented very well. He took questions from every single person and then answered them in a collective fashion. We went then and had a minyan because it was the Tanis, it was the fast day, and his staff, the people in his entourage, had a sefer Torah, and we had a minyan for Mincha then, right there in the Watergate, and the owner of the hotel, who was a religious Jew, was there as well. The incident that occurred thereafter was a little surprising because there were so many Secret Service and local police on duty. I can't understand how it could happen. Somebody must have registered a room, gone there with the maggots, with the crickets and stuff in their suitcases, and then went and released them. But how was it that they were not detected? How did they set off fire alarms during the night?
Yeah.
And there are cameras on every floor, every hotel today. I don't understand so I can't answer the question. It was true. The demonstrators were kept at bay, and there was a whole structure around the hotel for cars to enter or people to enter. You had to go through a magnetometer, you had to go through other security checks, and only if you were registered could you get in for the meeting as well. So the question of how this happened is a mystery still. And he had his own security there as well. So they were very clever in the way that it was carried out. The demonstrations as a whole, you are right, are not reflective of the American people. And if you look at the people who were there, and especially the next day at Union Station, where they tore down the flag, the huge flag that flies there, American flag, and burnt it, which for their own purposes was stupid. But I think it showed the American people what we're up against and what Netanyahu said in his speech. That is, this is a battle for America, that America is the real target. They were very aggressive on the streets. There was a lot of coverage. They kept them far, everybody pretty distant from the Capitol building. But I can tell you that police walked over to me and warned me about wearing a yarmulke as I walked in a particular direction, because they said they had people assaulted. And there were New York police there actually on duty, and they escorted me till I got to the car. They were going through the streets very aggressively, I would say. And of course, you saw what they were doing there, how they spray painted all over Union Station. And people should know it to understand what they're about. They talked about death to America. They talked about death to Israel. Their violent comments reflected in their actions. And that is a small, small minority. And not only that, but the general position regarding Israel remains very strong. In the Congress, we're very enthusiastic. I mean, the Republicans more demonstrably, but a lot of the Democratic section was basically filled except for the 60 or so. And last time he spoke during the Obama administration, almost the same number of people boycotted the session.
Right.
So it's ideological on their part. These are not supporters of Israel. These are not people who are sympathetic, and they should not be defended. And the fact that some made statements like Congressman Jerry Nadler, it's a very disappointing and disgusting comments that he made, not disappointing, surprising, because he's been on this track.
And Pelosi.
Well, Nancy Pelosi, but I think it's a little different when a congressman from New York, Pelosi, who champions herself as a friend of Israel, as with some of the others, some of it is personal. I mean, it's no surprise when a Sanders or a Warren doesn't show up. Amongst those who didn't come, there were very few surprises. We know the trends, and yet overwhelmingly measures of support. And people who some of the critics even said that they support Israel. It's just Netanyahu that they're angry at. And that, that becomes a good mantra. Yeah. It's a cover.
We know what that means.
Support Israel, right.
And we're not anti-Jewish. We've heard that song before. That's so typical.
We've heard that song before. The crowd, but it was still the hardest ticket to get in Washington. And by the way, I just should make reference that the other hardest ticket to get was in the morning was a memorial planned beforehand, before the announcement of the date, for Joe Lieberman in Washington. It was an extremely moving and uplifting thing to see for two former vice presidents, Pence and Al Gore. And Al Gore spoke, because, you know, remember, he ran together with Lieberman.
Did BB speak at that event?
Yes, and Netanyahu came there and spoke, which meant that the security was unbelievable getting there as well. And
Joe deserved it.
And Lindsey Graham gave hilarious, but such meaningful comments and remarks. And Ben Chavez and others, you know, representing a spectrum, Senator Susan Collins. But all of it so heartfelt, and noted his religious observance, his commitments, his integrity. Lindsey Graham said, you know, he was the any city in the world, Joe knew what time sunset came in. He said no matter where we went, he would tell us this is when we end. And all of them contested that they were the Shabbos guy for Joe, and said that he was so religious to the point of it's enough already. But it was, but the respect and Kiddush Hashem that he represented was so in evidence there, and you know, it was a sort of a relief moment given the tensions that were abundant in the streets around the Capitol.
Well, Joe deserved it, as we said so many times back in March when he passed away. It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com and the Nahum Siegel Network, and of course on the beloved NSN app. Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. All right, so you mentioned Kamala, and obviously that's the next topic, is the fact that now she is the Democratic nominee in place of Joe Biden. In some ways, Donald Trump's going to have a much more difficult battle. I'm sure you agree with that. If you want to get into details on that, please do. I think the best summary regarding her approach to Israel, aside from her insistence that she, you know, planted trees with the JNF. This will be, by the way, Biden's, I met with Golda Meir 50 years ago, is going to be, this is going to be her new, you know, her new mantra every time she speaks about Israel, that she planted trees or raised money to plant trees for the JNF. But here's the CNN summary of what her, of her statements from yesterday. They attribute this to her. I will not be silent about suffering in Gaza while touting support for Israel. And I think that that's, you know, the balancing act that she's now encountering. She wants to be seen as a supporter of Israel for a million, or maybe I could say even more than a million, obvious reasons. And at the same time, she has to, you know, if she's going to play to certain parts of her party and certain parts of the electorate who are watching closely, she's got to make sure to issue tremendous sympathy for what's happening regarding the suffering in Gaza. Address this balancing act that Kamala now has.
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. First of all, I don't think it's a question that they're mandated to express sympathy in the way that it's being done too often. The criticism is not directed at Israel. The criticism should be directed at who's responsible for all of this, which is Hamas. And no excuses, no exclusions. Israel has, as John Spencer, whom BB referenced from West Point, the leading expert on urban warfare in the war, has demonstrated this is the most carefully executed war, urban war, in probably in history, with the lowest combatant to non-combatant kill ratio in the world, that the food that is getting in and the 3,000 calories, he should have said per day, not just 3,000 calories are getting in, that, you know, 40,000 trucks going in. But again, I think nobody's indifferent to the suffering of people. It had nothing to do with October 7th, and many who oppose, or some who oppose Hamas, although the vast majority, as you see from the polls, express support for Hamas and express support for October 7th. They elected Hamas. There's no context anymore, given that there was no occupation, that Israel wasn't there, that all of the facts that we take for granted aren't necessarily known, even by leaders of government. They don't know the history. I wonder how many of them who protest Israel could tell you where the river and the sea, or show it on a map and tell the history of Israel's non-presence in Gaza, no Jews in Gaza, even though there is Jewish history there.
Right.
So I think that the press also, some of the reports last night were quite astonishing because some said, well, she praised Israel and then go on to the criticism where she did say good things at the beginning, including the reference you made about planting trees.
Right.
But many of them just skipped all of that and just, listening to BBC during the night and others abroad, the coverage was strictly about how she lectured him and said that, talked about the suffering. I'm not going to be silent in the face of the suffering. Who he said should be silent. But I haven't heard one speech about the Sudan where 150,000 had killed the Uyghurs and all of the other cases around the world. And here we're talking about an ally who is fighting an existential battle. And I think that context gets lost. I'm not saying this in regard to her comments, but the fact that she never wanted to come out as if she had lectured and she was stern with him. That is not the way allies should be treating allies in this case when they're fighting the battle for us. You can't make it more clear than the comments that the Iranian leaders themselves are making about their intent and about who the real target is. So I think the U.S.-Israel relationship remains very strong. The American people are there. The majority of Congress are there. They will be there. They will support aiding Israel to defend itself. She also made that reference that nobody contests Israel's right to security and to defend itself, and that she supports Israel. But went on then to enumerate the criticisms. But you got to do that in the context. You got to give the facts, the full story of the facts of right. What's happening on the ground. And that's Israel's obligation, too.
Yeah, understood. Well, sort of on that topic, is it true that Israeli security officials sent a letter to congressional leadership in the United States calling Bibi a, quote, existential threat to the state of Israel?
Are there people who did? Yes. There are people who have been writing these guys. First of all, you have former prime ministers, Barack, Olmert, others going on air and sending notes and doing all of this stuff. You have former security people who are involved in the security of Israel on both sides, Shin Bet, the Mossad army, because it's a very polarized society, politically polarized.
I get it, but any responsible diplomat would keep it within the, within the fold, and,
Well, you didn't say diplomat, you said security people.
No, but you just said
they're not diplomats, most of them.
But you just among them are former prime ministers?
Yes, that certainly doesn't make them diplomats, because they were foreign ministers. I mean, Barack and Olmert have been hypercritical, have been I think cross a lot of boundaries, as do other people who have served in the governments before. The petitions, the letters.
I know, but they should be going on Israeli radio and saying and not sending letters to members of the United States Congress.
I'm not arguing defense of it. I'm describing it.
I'm just frustrated, that's all.
We should be much more than frustrated. We should be angry about it. Because if the political battles in Israel are certainly justifiable, and criticism, you can criticize what the prime minister has done or hasn't done or what people think he should have done. I have plenty of criticisms of all the prime ministers, going back and of every president in the United States, because they didn't do what I thought. That's what all of these guys, they know better. But I didn't see Barack and Olmert doing a lot of these things when they were prime minister and changed their views. And it's become, I think that they lose sight of the fact that they're, in fact, undermining Israel, not just for now, but for the future. When they make these comments, they become then the justification for a lot of the criticism. They say, it's not us. Look at who's there. Look who's saying these things. It's a democracy. They have a right to say it. I personally especially feel sympathetic on the families of hostages who feel, because nothing can ever be enough until we get them all out and get them home. But I think people have to be careful because the longer term implications could be very serious.
By the way, with that in mind, do you think we are? I mean, who was it? was it Kirby this week who said, you know, we're at the 10-yard line and very close to the end zone in terms of a deal? I mean, is there you were in Washington this week. Is there reality here that they're speaking about, or is this a pipe dream? Like, how close are they to a real deal?
The negotiations were supposed to resume Thursday. There are people, even during this time, involved in exchanges. Prime Minister said he put it off till after his meeting with the president because he wanted to talk to him about the terms that Israel is insistent upon, including remaining in the Philadelphia route. But he did say in his speech that Israel is not going to remain. He talked about the vision of a sort of Marshall Plan, but bringing in leadership. Now you see the names being floated, Dahlan, you know, people who have been relegated to the past 10, 15 years ago, even Fayyad, who was shortly prime minister but was the first one to try to clean up the kleptocracy and stuff. So there are a lot of discussions. I've seen this week several proposals about creating alternative structures that might be a way to have Israel get out, but to retain control, the security control. Egypt has pledged to do more about it, but Israel feels it can't pull out of the Philadelphia route until the real assurances and real forces in play. And it's talking about bringing regional forces from Arab countries there to help the police and to assure that a transition can take place. Israel does not want to stay in Gaza. It's the last thing they want, but there's still those who criticize it for the withdrawal, the original withdrawal, and the fact that the security arrangements were not such that would prevent these multiple wars and the growth of Hamas. And now you see it in the Yehuda Shamron and the West Bank. There are arrests every single day, infrastructure being uncovered every single day, let alone what we face on what Israel faces on its northern border.
Yep.
And still the displacement of 80,000 people, which, you know, because we don't see it every day, people forget. And when I say it, you know, they look at me and they say, oh, I forgot all about them. That's the problem. Don't forget about them.
Yeah, they've already been informed by the government to possibly be prepared to be displaced until Pesach. And I'm talking about, Pesach of next year. So if you got all warm and fuzzy when you heard that Vice President Harris raised money for the JNF, how did you feel when you heard that her stepdaughter fundraises for UNRWA?
Yes, it's true. I mean, obviously she can displace that and say, you know, that's not her doing, but it's not just for UNRWA. She has associations with groups, I think, that are worse than that. But you know, the comments that she makes are clearly in line with a certain school and within the Democratic Party, and whether she, you know, it's all about Michigan, they keep saying. Well, I would tell her that the studies that I've seen show that there are more Jewish voters, actual voters, in Michigan than Muslim voters. And when you look at the studies, it shows that 2% of the people vote in the Middle East, that even among students, the vote is very different. You know, in historically black colleges, the organization that's a category of colleges, almost they had very few demonstrations. Only three of them had real manifestations and no encampments. So I think that there's a mistake in the way that this is being portrayed, because you have paid agents. I know and heard from a person, one of the demonstrators, that they hired 50 buses to bring people to the demonstrations outside the Capitol. Who paid for it? Who's paying for the other things that are being done? And if you look at them, they're not American students who are engaging by and large in these activities. Are there some? Sure. And, you know, whether you call them useful idiots or of Iran or other things, most of them have no real clue what the demonstration. There are some who are truly motivated, I'm sure, because somebody told them that all these people are suffering, but they're not demonstrating for any other group. It's human rights that really motivates them. And I think we know that politicians, resort to messages and in front of different audiences to give different messages, but when you're talking to the whole world, as the president did, as others, as the president did, it takes on a whole different magnitude of importance.
I'm just confused with something that I think you just said. There are more Jewish voters, you said, in Michigan than Muslims?
I saw a study that showed actual voters, it's not population, but actual people who go to the polls are still more Jews than Muslims or Arabs that go to the that go and vote. And even in those communities, in the Muslim communities, it's not so monolithic. They don't want Hamas, and they want Hezbollah. They don't want to see people dying. Right. But when they, but you know, when you have all these distorted numbers and how blindly they use the 40,000 figure, and you don't see the reference anymore that this is a Gaza health ministry controlled by Hamas,
right.
And that the number, that the truth is that the number of civilians being killed has dropped precipitously, and that even in Rafah, and he gave one citation. I'm not going to say that members of Congress I spoke to afterwards found it, you know, so convincing because they see the pictures. You have to always sell people in a sense that they can take it, they can accept it.
Yeah, he went down a road he shouldn't have. You're right.
They're right.
In reference to the numbers, correct? They found it hard to believe. All right, three quick things. If we could do this quickly. Donald Trump, he's meeting with him today, the former president of the United States, meaning Bibi's meeting with him today. He actually called for an end of the war. Now, I don't know if this is different than what Trump's been saying over the last couple of months. It's possible that he's been calling for the end of the war, earlier than now. But it seemed to me like it was set in a different tone. You agree or not?
No, he has been saying it, and he still calls for support for Israel, and is proud of what he's done on the Abraham Accords, and talks about extending the Abraham Accords. Now everybody talks about it. Well, both parties are talking about wanting to grow it, and certainly President Biden talked for a long time about the Saudi bringing in the Saudis into the equation, something Israel doesn't want. So I don't know that it was new. We'll have to see what he says after this meeting. And Netanyahu is really going way out of his way in order to see him flying to Florida and then back to Washington and having to spend Shabbos, which was not intended, in Washington because they couldn't fly back to Israel. And supposedly the hotels there couldn't accommodate the security needs to keep them there over Shabbos. We'll see what he says after his comment, after the meeting today. Right.
When does he leave, tomorrow night or Sunday morning?
I think they're planning to leave. I think now it was Sunday morning, if I'm not mistaken.
Have the Houthis been taught a lesson by Israel?
Well, there is a lesson that they saw Israel's capability, and it was a remarkable strike. And the refueling capacity demonstrated the fact that you had 12 different aircraft, types of aircraft involved, that the fire at the port was burning for a long time. And this is Yemen's major economic support was the export of fuel and the burning the tanks there and destroying the cranes, which are used to especially to import weapons and systems from Iran. Which goes through this port in Hodeidah, and the nature of the strike was remarkable and exposes the weakness of Yemen. There is no reason that we have tolerated, even though American and British planes have been bombing, that we've tolerated the continuance of these attacks against the ships. The attack on Israel, the one that got through, which I'm told now, didn't hit the building. It exploded right before the building. And it was a remarkable feat that it could fly without refueling. It's a lightweight craft, and therefore could go all the way across Sudan, Egypt, the Mediterranean, and come into Tel Aviv. But there were three others launched at the same time, which American ships in took down. And again, that's why America's presence, and we should be grateful for it, in the Mediterranean, the aircraft carrier groups that were in the Red Sea have been repeatedly. And there was also a missile fired at Israel at the same time. So four of the projectiles came down. One actually got through, and I think it was more human error on the people who were monitoring it, didn't remove it. So they demonstrated a capacity that I think surprised a lot of people. Obviously, this is Iran's material, Iran technology, but and Iran continues to send more equipment. Russia has threatened to supply weapons to them and missiles to them, to Yemen. to counter the American supplies to Ukraine. If they have missiles, they're using them in Ukraine. They're not sending them to Yemen. This is all Iranian equipment, Iranian training, Iranian missiles that are being used, and we have to interdict them and make sure they don't get through. They're still shooting at ships. They still harass them. They use now drones, but seaborne drones that go after the ships. This is a little technical, but it's very important to understand that this is the poorest country in the world. This is a nothing group that has been allowed now to develop an army that threatens Saudi Arabia, was at war with Saudi Arabia. Both sides backed down, but they never really resolved it. And Yemen is just a tool of Iran as is Hamas, Hezbollah, and all of the others that are enumerated all the time, and which we talked about here for 10 years, 9 years, warning of the ring of fire that was being created. This is not a development of a week or two or months. It's a huge infrastructure. You see what Hezbollah is able to fire at Israel, 200 missiles in the morning, 300 missiles in a day, more, and much more, without escalating to a real full-out war, which is something Israel certainly doesn't want. I think Hezbollah doesn't want. Iran doesn't want at this time. We have to see Gaza finished, and the number of terrorists who are being killed now is quite amazing, because they regroup in various places, and Israel goes back, whether it's Khan Yunis or other cities that they already withdrew from, and are able to do targeted things because they gather in a building. So the numbers are really quite remarkable.
Yeah, that was one statistic, by the way, that I was glad he said from the podium. Whether it's 100% accurate or not, just the fact that he was able to tell the world what Israel's been doing in terms of getting rid of terrorists, I thought was very effective.
It's a message that they understand that these are terrorists who want to target American and Western interests. Yeah. And they're doing it. Look what they've done to our shipping in the Red Sea, how they virtually closed down the Suez Canal, which is a major source of income for Egypt. And the prices we pay in the store go up 10-15% because of it.
Yeah,
because of the longer shipping route that they have to go.
Finally, do you think that the Knesset's going to go ahead with its planned 3-month recess?
As of now, I do believe that they will go ahead. I think it's the longest recess they've ever had until after Sukkot, which is traditionally when they regroup, but this year it's late. So it's going well into the end of October. That doesn't mean that they can't be reconvened. It doesn't mean that there won't be ability to address the issues in Gaza and elsewhere. I think it'll be controversial. That they're out for so long. Some people have said to me, it's much better if all the government would go out of business for 3 months. We always seem to do better than that they say the most powerful government is when in between governments, and then they really get things done. But it's not a good message to the people who really want to see this thing ended. You see every day still people are being killed, men and women. Who are on the front lines, the most heroic and angelic people that you can imagine. Yep. And you see their families and you understand their families and that of the Chatufim, which should be on our minds and hearts every day. I do not criticize the families for what they do. Nobody should have to be in that position. It's a long time. They're frustrated, rightfully so. And every day they know their loved ones are suffering inhumanities that no one can even imagine.
Yeah. Thank you, Malcolm. Have a good Shabbos. We'll speak, please God, next Shabbos. Week. Malcolm Holmline, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Friday Morning Weekly Update here at JM in the AM.